On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 104, Willy Willies, Militias, Misbehaving Eyes, and Genocide. All of this and more! The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Tap. That's not tap. A low-calorie carbonated beverage. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Wait, that really sucked. That's like sliding, tripping, walking, trying to skip across the stage in a acrobatic, balletic quality, and then just slipping on a tomato that's flung at you. Jose! I'm Kenty, your host. Jose, my co-host. Your co-host. I'm the co-host. He's the co-host. He's right here, sitting in my lap. He's sniffing the floor. Aren't you, Jose? Nice yawn. He is, takes after his daddy. He's doing pretty good. He's a pretty good dog considering all the crap he's been through. Literally, having a piece of plastic go through his entire digestive tract. Jose, he's a miracle dog. Jesus loves him. Jesus loves him. I'm a homosexual from Rockport, Massachusetts. Jose's my little gay poodle, and we're gay together. And there is no homosexual agenda. Homosexuals have rights. And homosexuals should have the right to marry. It's my little political thing. Homosexuals are a group of individuals. According to the United Nations General Assembly Resolution of December 11th, 1946, the crime of genocide is considered... Genocide is a denial of the right of existence. Genocide is a denial of the right of existence of entire human groups. As homicide is the denial of the right to live of individual human beings, such denial of the right of existence shocks the conscience of mankind, or should. I added that, results in great losses to humanity in the form of cultural and other contributions represented by these human groups, and it is contrary to moral law and to the spirit and aims of the United Nations. Notice that it says the denial of the right of existence of entire human groups. Now, does that mean that you can deny the right of... Can you, like, ignore entire groups of people? So they have no right? Or does that mean that you're killing them? I mean, of course, killing an entire group of people is going to be genocide, right? You would think so. Jose! Let me put him down. Go take a nap. He's up. You know, it's funny because, you know, he usually is napping. But he is very alert. So that's good. Yeah, so genocide is that. Interestingly enough, the American Anti-Defamation League, which was created in, I don't know when it was created. I think it was actually created in the, before World War I. I think 1913 comes to mind. Maybe not. Maybe 1906. I don't know. Something like that. It's a Jewish organization. And there they fight extremism, and they, you know, Holocaust remembrance and stuff like that, remember the Holocaust. However, much like the Catholic Church, took the Catholic Church eons to realize that Newton wasn't a sinner and forgave him, you know, for saying that the sun doesn't, that the earth, you know, revolves around the sun, right? After years, you know, saying, oh, yeah, okay, we're he's okay. He's okay. He's right. The Anti-Defamation League, now, mind you, it's a Jewish organization, which I have nothing against that. But, you know, they do talk about the Holocaust, which was a genocide of, and he used the indefinite singular article A, genocide, because there's more than one genocide, especially in the 20th century and now. But they refused to equate the Armenian massacre with a genocide, which was totally wrong. The Armenians, the Ottoman Turks, had a planned genocide to kill non-Muslim Armenians, Christian Armenians, during World War I, or before World War I. Let me let Jose out. Hold on.
Come on, Jose. You were wanting to come in here.
My co-host, you know, he just doesn't realize the responsibility and power he has. He treats it with little respect. But, yeah, so the Anti-Defamation League for all these years was saying, no, the Armenians weren't. There was no genocide. No, it was just unfortunate. You know, it was a lot of killings. It wasn't a genocide. Recently, a leader in the New England chapter of the Anti-Defamation League said, you know what, the Armenians were, that's a genocide. And he was fired for that. And there are a lot of Armenians in Massachusetts, especially in Watertown. So other people left the Anti-Defamation League over this because, you know, they should realize what it is, you know. They're supposed to be the Anti-Defamation League. I mean, I respected them, right? We've been reading about this. Watertown, which has a large Armenian population, said, you know what, we're not going to be involved with the Anti-Defamation League as a town until, you know, because of this. You know, you're ignoring facts. You know, you're ignoring the fact that millions, I don't know how many it was, a million Armenians were massacred in a genocide, a plan to exterminate them. So just recently, the Anti-Defamation League said, oh, yes, it was a genocide. So, you know, thank God, you know, that the Anti-Defamation League is there. Which brings me to Darfur. Save Darfur. There's a genocide going on in Darfur. It's been recognized by the United States, okay? The Anti-Defamation League, though, on their website says, a threat to Darfur. A threat, just a threat. Well, when does that become a threat to an actual genocide? When does the Anti-Defamation League realize what is going on? It sounds political to me. Who knows, you know? I don't know what is up their ass, you know? I mean, it's fine that's a Jewish organization. But, you know, the name Anti-Defamation League, you know, sounds like it's for everybody. I mean, and they do good stuff. When they have a website about extremism and, like, militias and all these, like, hate groups and KKK and stuff. And that's good, you know? Good to know. But this other part just, like, rubs me wrong. So, Joe G., the reason why you want to help Darfur is because there's a genocide going on. I thought, you know, originally I knew that that was happening, and I thought that's where the children armies were, and I think it might be, but, you know, there's Liberia, too, with the children armies. They have those cocksuckers, Taylor, the president of Liberia, and the Blood Diamonds and all that crap, taking the children and giving them a choice to join their army or chopping off their arms. It's fucking crazy. The world is fucking crazy. So that's why you want to save Darfur. Don't be a cunt. I'm channeling Madge there, so. You know, really. You know, she had this thing. Okay, let's talk about the word cunt. It's an old English word, right? The reason why I shouldn't have used it is not because it refers to a vagina, but it sort of makes it sound like it's a bad thing. Like, it equates female genitalia with something bad, you know, being a cunt. You know what a cunt is, right? I mean, we know what that means. Just being in, you know, hold on. I have to get a sip of my diet soda. I need a sip of something. A sparkling beverage. A diet sparkling beverage. Caffeine free. Okay. I'm better. All I could use is a celery soda or an egg cream. Okay. Where was I? See? These things happen. So, oh, yeah. Where was I? Cunt. That's it. It's a good old-fashioned, you know, English word, okay? And it means vagina. Of course, there is the connotation of being a cunt, which is being, like, you know, a cunt. And that's unfortunate, because it shouldn't be equate. I shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't be using it, because it equates female, the femaleness, with a problem. You know, being a cunt. At the same time, right? Being a cunt is the same as being a prick. So, and a prick is a penis, just as a cunt is a vagina. So, actually, it doesn't equate. It actually equals out, because being a prick and being a cunt are the same thing, you know? So you actually, when you say you're being a cunt or you're being a prick, it's not really a bad thing, actually, because you can be a prick or a cunt, you know? It's the same thing. It's female and female, so. So, you know, I think that's a, you know, so I just realized that you can actually say that and mean it without being, you know, without feeling bad about, like, saying something bad about the female part of our race, because there's a word which is male-related. I mean, the male genitalia being the penis. This means prick. Saying prick means, you know, you're a dick. To be a pussy is something else. To be a pussy, you're not a cunt. To be a pussy, you're a wuss. But to be a dick or a prick or a cunt is the same thing. Actually, there's more bad things related to the male side than the woman's side, you know. Except pussy means to be a pussy, you know. Which that's kind of bad, too, because that's weak, you know. And the vagina is a strong thing. I mean, it gives birth to babies, you know. Okay, enough. Enough of this. Where are my notes? Here, I've wrapped them up into a little Dutch hat. I should take a picture of it. Okay, I have to remember, I folded up my notes while I was talking, because I do that. Like, I'll twiddle my thumb or whatever. Not twiddle my thumb, like, I'll have my pen or something. Well, I folded up, I did origami, and my notes are now a hat. So let me take a picture of it now, so I have it for the, where's my camera? So I have it, because I'm going to have to unfold it now. Today's show has wonderful new songs. I'm really happy with the stuff I've chosen. And I'll have my, I'll put it next to my diet sparkling beverage, too, okay? Okay, let me take a picture. Say cheese. Okay, hold on, let me try this one here. Come on, prolapse. Oh, I shouldn't say prolapse. You know. Okay, there are my notes. It'll be in the show notes, and so you can see. So take a look. Anyway, let me unwrap them. Oh, man. Christ. Oops. I shouldn't say that either. So, okay, genocide. I know. Darfur. Joe G., now you know why you should. Creative Commons. I really want my show to be Creative Commons, and I want to have to retain the right that if you're going to use it, I want to know, and I want to know how you're going to use it before I allow you to use a part of it. Either I really, you know, you can use the whole thing, right? But if you're going to use a part of it, I want to know how it's being used, I guess. I don't know. See, I do believe in Creative Commons and stuff, and I want to be part of this community. I'm not really sure how it works, and there are things in my show which are not really Creative Commons. So, you know, what do you say? Like, it's not, some of this is not Creative Commons, or only some of it is Creative Commons? Ask me. For the most part, anything that I say is Creative Commons, okay? Mostly the performances on my ukulele are Creative Commons. There are other stuff which is not necessarily Creative Commons, you know, but I would think people would know that, you know. I don't know. I'm trying to become self-sufficient, get off the grid, you know. That's why I want to use sheet music from the turn of the century that's in the public domain. Plus, it's part of vaudeville. That's the vaudeville songs, right? Today, three great songs. We have I Can't Make My Eyes Behave, we have Harvest Moon, and we have The Yama Yama Man. So they're all in the public domain. They're all vaudeville favorites from the turn of the century. And I worked on them and got the chords and the stuff for the ukulele and did it. So if you're interested in learning these songs, I can send you the lyrics and the lyrics and the chords. And that's that. The melody, I mean, I could write it out or whatever, but I'm not going to do that. You can just listen to me sing it, though it might not be exactly right. But it sounds good, you know, and it's jazz. It sounds good enough for jazz. Shop Pink. Okay, let me see here. Joe G has a podcast called, not for whatever reason, what the hell is it called? Joe G's podcast is called Bored Beyond Belief. Let me put my note here. Podcast. Okay. The Creative Commons thing is, I belong to Facebook, which is like a really like advanced version of MySpace. So if you are on Facebook, come find me, Kenty, The Flatus Show on Facebook. I'm there. Join me. I don't have The Flatus Show as a special little section of the of a Facebook account. You know, it's just me. Okay. So maybe I should. I don't know. But I like Facebook. So come on and join Facebook and be my friend, and I'll poke you. You'll understand that if you join Facebook. Okay. Shop Pink. They mentioned on their other show about they're willing to play some songs of other people on their show, and they mentioned to me. So, you know, if you want to, Darren and Jim, if you want to play any of my songs, let me know what you want. I'll send it to you. I'll send you a copy. You know that some of the stuff, I mean, most, actually, all of the stuff I perform, I didn't write, okay? Just stuff that I perform. I did create one song called Folky Boy. But you're willing, you're able, you know, if you want to listen. Actually, my compositions, I have compositions to MIDI files of things. If you want to use any of that, go right ahead, you know, and use it for your show or whatever you want to do. That's fine. And for the songs, let me know what you're interested in, and I'll send you a copy by itself. So I like it. And you know, and it makes me feel special that you would want to play my music or my musical doings. I am touched. I really am. Believe me. By the way, Shaw Pink, I did cover. I did do a cover of "Sex Zombie," and I sent it to Darren as an attachment to see if he thought it was good enough to show, and I didn't hear from him. So he probably never got the email or ignored it and didn't see the attachment. I don't know. But if you're interested in hearing it, I will send it to you again, but you have to contact me so I know that you know it's coming so you can hear it or look in your mailbox, okay? Mikal Carter, Pure Imagination. I'm waiting to find the sheet music, okay? I still am looking for it. Thank you. Next thing, Charlie White, congratulations on your run. That was really terrific that you did that. I think it was a half marathon, right? I should know by now because you sent the voice comments. I appreciate it. Which brings me to the voice comments, 206-984-3617. What do you think? Give me a call at 206-984-3617. And you two can talk to me, and I'll play your message, and we'll talk. And I want to hear what you think. I asked my listeners, and I don't know if it made it sound like only the older listeners should do this. All the listeners should go to iTunes and write a review for The Flatus Show, because I would like to have your individual, what you think individually, you know, about The Flatus Show. That would be really cool. I'm going to look up what Charlie wrote because he emailed me and said he did the iTunes review. Maybe I have other people here too. Four reviews. Here we go. Kenty has a wonderful podcast full of diversified views. You never know what you will hear there from week to week. There is nothing quite like a ukulele. Cheers for this show and for Jose. So there you go. I have four reviews. Please go to iTunes and write a review. I would appreciate it very much. I would. So I know that people are listening and whatever. I know people are listening, but I want you to respond, you know. It's like poking a corpse, okay? So some of the neurons are firing, honey.
Deep Flatus, the special features from theflatusshow.com. Jose and I invite you to come to theflatusshow.com and sign up.
So, yeah, Facebook, 206-984-3617. You, too, can call The Flatus Show. Another thing is I'm looking for people to send me, I don't know if you call them bumpers or whatever, what it would be like you would say, "Hi, I'm Dale from the such and such podcast, and you're listening to The Flatus Show with Kenty and Jose." And so in place of Dale, you would put your name, and in place of podcast, you'd put the podcast that you do. Or if you don't do a podcast, you can just say, "I am Dale from Wyoming, and I listen to you're listening to The Flatus Show with Jose and Kenty." So I'm looking for those. Something simple in mono, and you can send me MP3 or WAV file or AIFF file, in a high quality, like 44.1 kilobytes or whatever. It should only be less than 12 seconds or at the most, right? 12 seconds. So if you could do that, I would appreciate it very much. I'm going to intersplice them. So if you do have a podcast, this will give you, some exposure, and it will also identify the show, my show, okay, which I want to do throughout the body of the work, it's all about the work, body of the show. Last, this is the last thing in the beginning here, Mandrake Society Radio. I got an email from J.W. Richard, the producer and producer. He does everything for Mandrake Society Radio and mandrakefm.com. Don't forget that, which I forgot about, actually, because I was listening to Chili. I was looking at Chili Dilly's website, Dag. I don't know what he goes by now. I'm a blank. He does that character, Dag, whatever. Dag on his website had a link to Mandrake FM. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I forgot about that." So, JW, I forgot about your second podcast. What else are you doing? You're so prolific. So he wrote me, and I'll read this. "Just wanted to give you first invite to the Mandrake Society Radio Podcast Listener Appreciation Event called Pride and Pop. That'll be on Saturday, September 15th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Soda Gallery in Dallas. More information will follow from one of the event's co-sponsors, Men of Essence. So when you see the email from them, it's not spam. Got it? Cool. Three reasons why you should be there. To support the podcast, of course. 118 episodes so far, including Mandrake FM shows, and it's just getting started. To celebrate pride in our community. Bishop's Art District, Oak Cliff. Weekend of Mexican Independence Day. Dallas GLBT Pride Weekend. And three, I have plenty of goodies to give away to thank you for listening to the show and coming to the event first come, first get. More info later. Please save the date and time of Saturday, September 15th from 4 to 6 p.m., and be sure to tell a friend." That's what I'm doing, JW. So if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, is that where it is? For Dallas area, on September 15th, go to the Soda Gallery in Dallas between 4 and 6 p.m., meet JW, and see all the great stuff that's going on in Dallas. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Listen to Mandrake Society Radio for further information. So go to mandrakesocietyradio.com to find out how you can get involved with his podcast and and see what's going on with this event. I'd love to come, JW, except I don't think I'll be able to make it this year because of time restrictions and stuff. Though, I mean, it's a weekend. I mean, I don't know. I don't really travel that much, so I don't even know what it's like to travel like overnight or whatever to a city. I don't know. I wouldn't know the first thing. I don't even know anything about Texas, so. On with the show.
Maybe if you talk dirty for a little while.
And so this is no longer the America of our childhood, of unlocked doors and walks on a summer night, Senators. This is a country at war, a country where we are no longer safe. Not only in our streets, but in our own homes. And that's because the criminals are taking over. And these criminals, they're not afraid of the police or the courts. So who's left to stop them? The citizens. Always the last resort, the American citizens. We must not give in. We must not let them take over. We must once again have a country where we do walk home on a summer night and sleep with the windows open and not be afraid.
Thank you, Sheriff Campbell. We are now open for questions from the floor. Senator Codd of New York.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you suggesting, Sheriff Campbell, that we arm every citizen? Because if you are, I'm afraid we're going to have to be afraid of something else. Shooting each other.
No, Senator, no. I'm not talking about everybody should get a gun here. All I'm saying is that we have to be, one, aware, and two, ready to defend. And that doesn't have to be a gun. It could be self-defense classes, tear gas, dogs, bats. Which, by the way, I now manufacture.
Senator Baldero of Oregon.
You're manufacturing bats?
Yes, sir. It's the Bat Campbell bat. That's one size hits all.
Well, that's a major concern to me, Sheriff, because if you want bats for everyone, then let me assure you there will not be one tree left in America. We'll eliminate shade and we will all die from sunstroke. Which is far less pleasant than being murdered.
No, sir, I don't think we're all going to die from sunstroke.
Not to mention, of course, the birds.
Birds?
Where will the birds live? And then the birds die and you got a worm problem. We have worms everywhere.
Mr. Chairman.
The senator from Oregon yield to the senator from New York.
Yeah. Senator, I appreciate your concern for birds and worms.
But I'm more concerned about people. I don't think increasing violence is the answer to increased violence.
Senator Lawton of Alabama.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was to refute what my liberal pink old colleague from the great intellectual city of New York has said. Killing is as American as apple pie. And we have to kill to live. If you're sick of being killed, you kill first. Nothing wrong with killing, as long as you kill the right person.
Well, it seems we're out of time, gentlemen. Sheriff Campbell, is there anything you wish to say in closing?
Yes, sir. I just want to say that with a little work, we can make this country safe again. All that's needed here is awareness, which we now have, and action, which we're soon going to take. And I want to thank you very much for being here. It's an honor and a privilege, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff Campbell. This hearing is adjourned.
Oh, listen, I got the back table back for everybody over here.
Gun ownership feedback. This is from Kristen Oblivion. Hi, Kenty. I'm writing to you in response of your request for further thoughts on gun control, especially in light of civilian machine gun ownership. My position differs from yours, and I wanted to take this opportunity to explain why I believe that there is a valid argument for automatic rifle ownership by private citizens. Beforehand, let me assure you that my position on the Second Amendment isn't one that is so stubbornly adherent that I cannot see validity to opposition. Indeed, in our modern times of unlimited access, comfort, and displacement, we seem to live in an America that often appears unable to cope with the responsibilities and appropriate usage of firearms for sport, protection, collection, and sustenance.
In realization that my position may be peppered within my cultural origin of Texas, it is my observation that most Texans don't own guns. However, we do seem to hold a relevant stigma as a virtual gun owner's paradise. In that spirit, I admit that I personally own a handgun for protection. But this is not the only capacity for gun ownership in a modern collective mindset that has allowed media news to demonize gun ownership as a potential antisocial behavior that should be avoided. In the interest of assault rifles and automatic firearms, there remains a valid constitutional interest in the preservation of this important right, in furtherance of the fragile and uncertain continuance of American ideals of freedom and a people's government far in the distant future, long after you and I have gone. Unfortunately, the price of genuine freedom from oppression can become quite costly and emotional, and the citizens themselves are often ill-prepared to take up arms and fight an unfamiliar oppressor in light of their regular routines and positions. It is because of this perpetual and inherently silent threat that a citizen-bodied militia would be hard-pressed to fight against a foreign or domestic foe, even with our present constitutional position. That is, with technological warfare and superweapons of the last 100 years, it would be a difficult reprisal to negotiate any meaningful sanctions onto an offender on our nation's soil absent of equal potential firepower. Therefore, even with our solemn right to purchase and own these deadly weapons, a small militia would remain heavily outgunned and underprepared in a best-case scenario. War, especially civil war, is a terrible emotional turmoil, the likes of which I hope that neither I nor any of my loved ones should ever have to endure. But we live in a subtly violent, greedy, prejudiced world that is littered with occasions of notoriety and surprise to the benefit of evil's cause. It is because of this ever-present acknowledgement that our founding fathers were wise as they were prophetic in the inclusion of an arms right as our second most important right in the preservation of our ideals as Americans. When those inalienable ideals are grossly treaded upon or substantially threatened, a few modern-day George Washingtons, Ben Franklins, and Thomas Jeffersons will surely rise from the most unlikely of places in a diversity that will challenge every intolerance that this country has ever known. These women and men will need to have the tools, skills, and confidence that back their ornate words and demands for the restoration of America and her ideals of freedom and justice. Within the Gees, the only way to ensure their appropriation is through the ownership of military-styled weapons for the few persons who are comfortable with their responsibility and maintenance. But even in this sentiment, we cannot turn a blind eye to the violent problems of modernity. Indeed, there are those who would abuse and exploit our weaknesses and open trust in promotion of their twisted serialism. In this understanding, however, we must remain suspicious of laws that hope to become so restrictive and so certain as to become idealistically self-enforceable. No law, on its own worded merit of schedule of correction, is able to overcome or second-guess every instant of the criminally insane mind. I would unapologetically submit that the practicable threat for future repercussions of ever-changing gun laws harbor a greater potential menace to our society as a whole than any single unusual or unfortunate event that cause us to collectively question our current customs and laws as they stand. And I might also suggest that the uncertain footing of gun ownership in this country, alongside the media's demonization of such, gives potential criminals a certain power over the masses through their heinous actions that go unchecked until the slow wheels of justice and procedure finally engage. And that's from Kristen. Thank you, Kristen.
The night was mighty dark, so you could hardly see, for the moon refused to shine. Couple sitting underneath a willow tree for love they pine. Little little maid was kind of afraid of darkness, so she said, I guess I'll go. Boy began to sigh, looked up at the sky, told the moon his little tale of woe. Oh, shine on, harvest moon up in the sky. I ain't had no lovin' since April, January, June, or July. Snow time ain't no time to stay outdoors and spoon. So shine on, harvest moon for me and my gal. I can't see why a boy should sigh when by his side is the girl he loves so true. All he has to say is, won't you be my bride? For I love you. Why should I be telling you this secret when I know that you can guess? Harvest moon will smile, shine on all the while, if the little girl should answer yes. Oh, shine on, harvest moon up in the sky. I ain't had no lovin' since April, January, June, or July. Snow time ain't no time to stay outdoors and spoon. So shine on, harvest moon for me and my gal.
Kristen brings up some good points in her letter. The point of the gun rights to their own guns to fight against our own government if it ever becomes tyrannical is, you know, one of the reasons why we have the Second Amendment. That's, you know, the main reason. We can bear arms in case anything happens. However, how do we determine that in this day and age? You know, it's not even clear how it was determined to fight the Revolutionary War. Suppose England had decided, okay, we're going to give you representation. We won't tax you so much. Here's some extra money. Do you think that the American Revolution would have happened? No, probably not. You know, so what is it about the, well, maybe it would, you know, or maybe it would have just, you know, held it off until a future time. I don't know. Oh, I wanted to add this because I forgot about it. Is in countries, some countries such as Switzerland, they practice universal conscription, which requires that all male citizens keep fully automatic firearms at home in case of a call-up. Every male between the ages of 20 and 42 is considered a candidate for conscription into the military, and following a brief period of active duty, will commonly be enrolled in the militia until age or an ability in or an Wait, in the militia until age or an inability to serve ends his service obligation. During their National Guard enrollment, these men are required to keep their government-issued selective fire combat rifles and semi-automatic handguns in their homes, together with 50 rounds of government-issued ammunition, sealed and inspected regularly to ensure that each firearm is always combat-ready. In addition to these official weapons, Swiss citizens are allowed to purchase surplus to inventory combat rifles, and shooting is a popular sport in all the Swiss cantons. Ammunition sold at rifle ranges is intended to be expended at the time of purchase, but target and sporting ammunition is widely available in gun and sporting goods stores. So that's interesting about Switzerland. Another thing about the National Guard is Iraq, right? We have people in Iraq, which is fine. I mean, it's not fine. I mean, you know, I am for our soldiers. I mean, if somebody wants to be a soldier and fight for our country, I'm all for it. You know, go for it. And I think we should give them, you know, a fair deal, right? we invade fucking Iraq with too few people. And then the next thing you know, it's like we're like feeding our army a little bit at a time as they're being smeared. I mean, you know, our guys are being killed. They're being killed. And we're using our National Guard to go over there to Iraq. I mean, for a long time. They're supposed to be called up in the case of an emergency. What happens if there's an attack on our, you know, mainland, you know? We don't have anybody left. And apparently the government, the army is, is being depleted. You know, there's not enough people to fill the needs. And another thing is you have these people in office who don't have their children in the army, and yet they want people, you know, they want everybody else to go to the army, you know. I mean, I think it's not a noble thing. If you want to go in the army, that's fine. I also think that voters should be voting for people who have been in the army or have children in the army, you know, if they're going to be voting for war, you know. I just don't understand, you know. Maybe that's another thing about this, is that the United States, right, we don't really know what it's like, right, what it is to be civilly minded, to do our civil duty, right? Maybe it is our civil duty to do some sort of time in the Navy, I mean, or in the Army, like 2 year stint. Like Israel, everybody has to go into the Israeli Army for 2 years. Switzerland, all the males have to be, I think they have to go into the Army for some sort of time, and then they have to be ready to fight, you know? Americans are fat and lazy. They let other people do it, and they fly flags and everything, but we don't do our civil right. We don't do anything civilly here. I mean, we don't have any responsibility. We're just sitting ducks. I mean, we should be, like, okay, let's talk about voting. We should be more involved in looking at these voting booths and stuff. I mean, you know, I'd love to get involved with that, the voting process here in Rockport, the little local. See how it's done. Make sure it's done right. I want to be an auditor for that. Make sure none of that crap is happening, you know. I'll make sure. Believe me. I won't let anything get by me. I am very good at that. So, you know, I'm honest, and I'll make sure the vote gets counted right, you know. And, you know, I believe in education. I already said about, well, I don't know if I said it before this or later, but I do believe in education. I just don't believe in the higher educational system because I think it's a, because they're assholes. The idea of liberty, idea that men, that people are the backbone of the government. They're the ones who form the government for the people, by the people. Though at the time of the revolution in the early America, you know, the only people who could vote were men over the age of, you know, 21. It makes me wonder about what the society was like. You know, what were, you know, there must have been destitute men who were over the age of 21. Did they vote? Did they get to the voting box? Or was it really just landowners and merchants and stuff who voted? You know, I'd be really interesting to find out how that worked in early America, the early part of the 20th century. Because you remember, women didn't have any right to do, had nothing, no say in the United States. So at that time, along with, you know, blacks, and probably you know, anybody else who isn't white and from a white European white male. And, you know, I'm a white male from European descent, so, you know, I realize I come from privilege, but not really. I don't. personal privilege, I should say. I don't. We talk about a citizen-bodied militia, right? But how does that happen? Like, you know, what do you mean by that? Should Americans be able to form militias? I mean, you could have a bunch of little militias all over the place, which there already are, okay? You know, in Michigan and wherever. You have all these little extremist groups, usually fueled by racist rhetoric, you know, Christian racist rhetoric. I say Christian because I don't believe that what these people believe is Christianity, but they do. So, you know, they're Paulines, you know, the Paulines. And I think to myself, what about Ruby Ridge? Okay. This was a guy, Weaver, right? He was involved with some extremist groups, right? But the FBI was coming to his land to get his sawed off shotguns, right? And it ended up being this big thing. I mean, killing his wife and stuff. And then and after it was all done and said, he wasn't charged with anything except for, I don't know, some minor thing. He was in jail for 2 years. Did the government have the right to do that? And what about Waco, Texas with David Koresh? You know, I mean, I'm thinking about, I don't know if this has anything to do with militias or the way the government or way people fight back against the government. I think it is in a way. I mean, isn't it more important that we have a free press and we have freedom of speech? I mean, that goes a long way towards maintaining our liberty, especially in today's age. Of course. What is to stop the government? Okay, let's say a tyrant takes over the government, right, and sends in the troops to suppress the population. You know, as Kristen points out, how would you mobilize a militia? Who would you trust? And the government has bigger and badder weapons than we'll ever know, you know. And there's many ways that the government can control people. Keep them from, you know, uprising or, you know, kill them or whatever. You know, it's a really sick thing, which makes you think, like, who runs the government? You know, is the government the lapdog of industry and, you know, people of wealth, the 1% who keeps on getting richer? I mean, that would seem to be, right? The thing is that whatever happens is going to happen, right? I don't think America's going to last. And, you know, with people who have a will to do something, they're going to do it, you know, regardless of whether it's good or bad. Look at Hitler. He had a will to rise to power and, you know, institute Nazism and exterminate, you know, Jews and gays and everybody else who wasn't perfect. If you have a will, you have a way. And I think that's the problem. You know, you think about, okay, another thing is like, let's talk about the Twin Towers, okay? Before the Twin Towers were built, it was a little neighborhood and they had shops and stuff. And they, Rockefeller or whatever, came in and said, we're going to back the building of the Twin Towers. And of course, that meant destroying an entire neighborhood. Well, you know, the people there just didn't, you know, sit back. They fought, you know. They had pickets. They went to the city hall. You know what happened? You know what? They, regardless of what people wanted, okay, somebody else, they didn't want it. Somebody else wanted to have those towers, and they got their way. And they built the towers, okay? You know, people, especially, you know, neighborhoods. I mean, I know what happened in, you know, when I lived in Boston, I lived in the Fenway. They were building things, and you'd go and you'd say, you know, this is going to create a problem, right, for us. And they don't care. They just, it happens anyway. You can fight till you're blue in your teeth. Nothing will stop them. Nothing will stop. You have to have a will bigger than theirs to stop them, you know, and money, I suppose. I mean, they're trying to build, they're building a lab in the city of Boston, in the South End, which is going to test diseases which, you know, have no cure. I mean, like horrible diseases like Ebola and stuff. And the people are, you know, I think concern, because suppose the pathogen escapes. You know, what's going to happen to the city of Boston, to the neighbors, to the people in that neighborhood? You know, would you want Ebola testing in your back door? I don't think so. But it means money, because Boston University is, you know, wants it. And there, that's what it is. It all comes down to money and power, you know. And, you know, people are going to say, you know, you're going to hear the rhetoric, oh, it's all science and it's good and this, that, and the other thing. But it just comes down to money and people being cunts. Pardon my French. The thing is, if somebody else with more money and I don't know if it's money or power or whatever, it's will. It's a matter of will. And it doesn't make a difference if the person comes from, you know, modest means or not. Like I said, Hitler. Look at Karl Rove. He didn't even graduate college. Not that that means anything, because I didn't graduate from college, and I love learning, and I love education, but I'm not going to propagate that idea that college is better or whatever, because what's important is that people read and understand and think, you know, and that's the thing. Whether college is important or not, I don't know. It seems like the more I've been involved with higher education, the more I think it's a big racket. Especially the textbook industry, you know, it's like they charge you like an arm and a leg, hundreds and hundreds of dollars for these textbooks, which weigh 50 pounds, breaks your back to go to class, you know. So let me take a look here. Anything else? I guess I basically agree with you, Kristen. I can see what you're saying, except I'm not so sure that there are modern-day George Washingtons or Ben Franklins. I'm not sure if that's possible. I think the America is inevitably going to change. Probably won't survive. And I guess I'm a pessimist. Because you think that the citizens of a country, you know, things are supposed to advance and you're supposed to have it better than your father and mother and your grandmother. Well, it's not that I am hurting, but I'm also not as, in some ways, not as equal to what my parents and grandparents had. And it's not just me, it's everybody, you know? I think that it stinks, you know? I mean, at the same time, it's like, no one said that it's supposed to be that way. I mean, you know, there's no guarantees, I guess, you know? And so, my opinion is that America, since it's going this way, is really lost, you know? We just should give it up. I mean, actually, the sooner the better. Just, you know, it's like Ayn Rand. You know, stop, you know, just stop. Just stop doing whatever, you know? Why perpetuate a heaving, you know, dying ideal? You know, it's like there's no liberty anymore. I mean, there is liberty, you know. I mean, I'm able to do this podcast and stuff. But for how fucking long? You know? Here I am. I'm sorry. I guess I'm the downer at the party. I just don't have any hope for the United States. I mean, I really don't think it's going to last. And maybe that's natural. You know, maybe that's a natural thing. We'll just be a footnote in history thousands of years from now. And they'll be like, what, those people on crack? George Washington must have been smoking a bowl of marijuana he was growing. Because he did, you know, they did grow, our forefathers did have a cash crop of marijuana for the hemp. Did you know that? They probably smoked it too, you know. I don't use drugs. I don't advocate the use of drugs, but at the same time, I think things like marijuana should be legalized. I don't think it's a gateway drug. I don't think it's going to lead, if you legalize marijuana, I don't think it's going to lead to children smoking the Devil's Johnson on the sidewalk in your major cities. So that's my response, Kristen. I read the email, and I want my listeners to think about it and respond about this. Do you think America will last another 100 years? That's my question. And how do we determine when the government becomes tyrannical, and who do you trust to fight them, you know? So that's a good – these are all good questions, you know? Take back – we should take back the government. You know, we shouldn't let, you know, the assholes run it, you know? I don't want to see America die. I really don't. I just don't think it's going to last. It's built on ideals which have been stripped and stripped away, you know? You have the – you have – it all started when the court said corporations are individuals, you know, and then industrialism took over, and just, you know, one fuck up after another, you know, just one world power domination thing. But you know what? Humans will survive, and it will live, and it'll just be different. It's just different. It's always going to be different from what you think it is. And you know what? People in the future aren't going to know what it's like to live in the, to have lived in the 20th century and to experience the freedoms and the liberalness, I guess. I don't know. The liberty, you know, liberty to do things, to study, to, you know. In a way, they were just at a rest period, not really doing a lot. And somewhere down the road, you know, who knows? Who knows what the values will be? So that's that. Oh, yeah. And you, what is it about the government spying on Quakers?
In the northeast corner of my face, and the northwest corner of the self-same place, two bad brown eyes, things do and see that never are done by the rest of me. For I just can't make my eyes behave. Two bad brown eyes, I am their slave. My lips may say, run away from me, but my eyes say, come and play with me. And you won't blame poor little me, I'm sure, 'cause I just can't make my eyes behave. In the morning I a shopping go, at each clerk I look and murmur soft and low, I'll take this please, send it COD, but it always comes marked paid to me. For I just can't make my eyes behave. Two bad brown eyes, I am their slave. My lips may say, run away from me, but my eyes say, come and play with me. And you won't blame poor little me, I'm sure, 'cause I just can't make my eyes behave.
What is a hurricane? A hurricane is an intense storm that forms over a tropical ocean with the winds blowing counterclockwise around a central calm area called the eye. The recognized definition of a hurricane states that it is a windstorm in which the winds reach at least 74 miles per hour. Maximum speeds of 100 to 150 miles per hour are quite common in hurricanes striking coastlines.
speeds as high as 200 miles per hour have occurred, according to estimates made from structural damage. The strongest winds produced by nature are found in tornadoes, but they are restricted to fairly small areas, usually less than 1 mile. In hurricanes, maximum winds at the Earth's surface usually do not exceed 150 miles per hour, but they may occur over areas many tens of miles in diameter. Tornadoes last for periods measured in minutes. Hurricanes have durations of days. Hence, the property damage done by a single hurricane can be tragically high, even when compared with the effects of a tornado. Hurricanes are found in various parts of the world and have several names. The storms that form in the western North Pacific Ocean and strike Japan with regularity are called typhoons. In the northern part of the Indian Ocean, they are known as cyclones. In Australia, they are sometimes referred to as Willy Willies. In most other regions of the world, the term hurricane is common. Regardless of the differences in name, the storms have the same causes and similar properties. The number of hurricanes observed in the western Atlantic Ocean, Gulf of Mexico, or Caribbean Sea has ranged from as low as 2 in 1929 to as high as 21 in 1933. Most of them occurred in August, September, and October. In recent years, it has become common practice to give girls' names to the hurricanes in order to make identification a simple matter. The first hurricane of each summer is given a name beginning with an A, the second with a B, etc. Each year, the names are changed. The hurricane is permanently identified both for public warnings and for study of researchers.
Tot at night is afraid of the dark, you know. Some big Yama man they see when off to bed they go. Yama, Yama, the Yama man, terrible eyes and a face of ten. If you don't watch out, he'll get you without a doubt, if he can. Maybe he's hiding behind the chair, ready to spring out at you unaware. Run to your mama, for here comes the Yama, Yama man. Great big starry eyes you see, so you cover up your head. But that Yama man is there, standing right beside your bed. Yama, Yama, the Yama man, terrible eyes and a face of ten. If you don't watch out, he'll get you without a doubt, if he can. Maybe he's hiding behind the chair, ready to spring out at you unaware. Run for your mama, for here comes the Yama, Yama man. Ah!
Bible reading to confuse the Orthodox believer.
The devil isn't anybody's fool. You can bank on that. Plenty of folks will tell you there isn't any devil. That he is just a figure of speech, a poetic personification of the sin of our natures. People who say that, and especially all the time-serving, hypocritical ministers who say it, are liars. They are calling the Holy Bible a lie. I'll believe the Bible before I'll believe a lot of time-serving, society-fied, tea-drinking, smirking preachers. No, sir. You take God's word for it. There is a devil and a big one, too. But the devil is a smooth guy. He always was, and he is now. He is right on his job all the time, winter and summer. Just as he appeared to Christ in the wilderness, he is right in this tabernacle now, trying to make you sinners indifferent to Christ's sacrifice for your salvation. when the invitation is given and you start to get up and then settle back into your seat and say, I guess I don't want to give way to a temporary impulse. That's the real, genuine, blazing-eyed, cloven-hoofed, fork-tailed old devil hanging to your coattail. He knows all your weaknesses and how to appeal to them. He knows about you and how you have spent $60 in the last 2 years for tobacco to make your homes and your streets filthy, and that you haven't bought your wife a new dress in 2 years because you can't afford it. And he knows about you and the time and money you spend on fool hats and card parties, doing what you call getting into society, while your husband is being driven away from home by badly cooked meals and your children are running on the streets learning to be hoodlums. And he knows about you too, sir, and what you get when you go back of the drugstore prescription counter to buy medicine for your sick baby. And he knows about you and the lie you told about the girl across the street because she is sweeter and truer than you are. And the boys go to see her and keep away from you, you miserable thrower of slime, dug out of your own heart of envy. Yes, indeed, the devil knows all of you. When the revival comes along and the Church of God gets busy, we will always find the devil gets busy too. Whenever you find somebody that don't believe in the devil, you can bank on it that he has a devil in him bigger than a woodchuck. When the Holy Spirit descended at Pentecost, the devil didn't do a thing but go around and say that these fellows were drunk. And Peter got up and made him mad by saying that it was too early in the day. It was but the third hour. They had sense in those days. It was unreasonable to find them drunk at the third hour of the day. But now the fools sit up all night to booze. When you rush forward in God's work, the devil begins to rush against you. There was a rustic farmer walking through Lincoln Park, and he saw the sign, Beware of Pickpockets. What do they want to put up a fool sign like that? Everybody looks honest to me. He reached for his watch to see what time it was, and found it was gone. The pickpockets always get in the pockets of those who think there are no pickpockets around. Whenever you believe there is a devil around, you can keep him out. But if you say there isn't, he'll get you for sure. The Bible says there is a devil. You say there is no devil? Who knows the most, God or you? Jesus met a real foe, a personal devil. Reject it or deny it, as you may. If there is no devil, why do you cuss instead of pray? Why do you lie instead of telling the truth? Why don't you kiss your wife instead of cursing her? You have just got the devil in you, that is all. The devil is no fool. He is on to his job. The devil has been practicing for 6,000 years, and he has never had appendicitis, rheumatism, or tonsillitis. If you get to playing tag with the devil, he'll beat you at every clip. If I knew that all the devils in hell and all the devils in Pittsburgh were sitting out in the pews and sneering and jeering at me, I'd shoot God's truth right into their carcasses anyway. And I propose to keep firing away at the devils until by and by they come crawling out of their holes and swear that they were never in them. But their old hides would assay for lead and tan for chair bottoms. Men in general think very little of the devil and his devices, yet he is the most formidable enemy the human race has to contend with. There is only one attitude to have toward him, and that is to hit him. Don't pick up a sentence and smooth it and polish it and sugarcoat it, but shy it at him with all the rough corners on. The devil has more sense than lots of little preachers. Jesus said, "It is written." He didn't get up and quote Byron and Shakespeare. You get up and quote that stuff, and the devil will get you the ha-ha until you're gray-haired. Give the word of God, and he will take the count mighty quick. It is written, Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Don't you ever think for a minute that the devil isn't on the job all the time. He's been rehearsing for thousands of years, and when you fool around in his backyard, he will pat you on the back and tell you that you are it. I'll fight the devil in my own way, and I don't want people to growl that I'm not doing it right. The devil comes to me sometimes. Don't think that because I'm a preacher, the devil doesn't bother me any. The devil comes around regularly, and I put on the gloves and get busy right away. I owe God everything. I owe the devil nothing, except the best fight I can put up against him. I assault the devil's stronghold, and I expect no quarter, and I give him none.
I am in favor of everything the devil is against, and I'm against everything the devil is in favor of. The dance, the booze, the brewery, my friends that have cards in their homes. I'm against everything that the devil is in favor of, and I favor everything the devil is against, no matter what it is. If you know which side the devil is on, put me down on the other side anytime. Hell is the highest reward that the devil can offer you for being a servant of his. The devil's got a lot more sense than some of you preachers I know, and a lot of you old skeptics who quote Shakespeare and Carlyle and Emerson and everybody and everything rather than the Bible. When you hear a preacher say that he doesn't believe there is a devil, you can just bet your hat that he never preaches repentance. The men who do any preaching on repentance know there is a devil, for they hear him roar. I drive the same kind of nail as all Orthodox preachers do. The only difference is they use a tack hammer and I use a sledge. The preacher of today who is a humanitarian question point is preaching to empty benches. I do not want to believe and preach a lie. I would rather believe and preach a truth, no matter how unpleasant it is, than to believe and preach a pleasant lie. I believe there is a hell, and if I didn't, I wouldn't have the audacity to stand up here and preach it to you. If there ever comes a time when I don't believe in hell, I will leave the platform before I ever preach a sermon with that unbelief in my heart. I would rather believe and preach a truth, no matter how unpleasant, than to believe and preach a lie simply for the friendship and favor of some people. The man that preaches the truth is your friend. I have no desire to be any more broad or liberal than Jesus, not a whit, and nobody has any right either, and claim to be a preacher. Is a man cruel that tells you the truth? The man tells you there is no hell is the cruel man, and the man that tells you there is a hell is your friend. So it's a kindness to point out the danger. God's ministers have no business to hold back the truth. I don't believe you can remember when you heard a sermon on hell. Well, you'll hear about hell while I'm here. God Almighty put hell in the Bible, and any preacher that sidesteps it because there are people sitting in the pews who don't like it ought to get out of the pulpit. He is simply trimming his sails to catch a passing breeze of popular. You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Cause I just can't.